This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Ari Shapiro in Washington. Neil Conan is off for Christmas. The internet has revolutionized how we communicate with each other, and now it's changing the way we communicate with the divine.
Oh, baby, I want to read with you, because your Bible's got pictures. My minister trying to console me, but that book you got makes
me so holy.
Baby Got Book is one of the most viewed videos on the website GodTube. This hour, we're going to explore what happens to a religious experience when you take away the congregation in the pews, get rid of the pipe organ, the incense, the choir, and even the feel of the prayer book in your hands. If you get the Spirit online, we want to hear from you. How is the experience different from praying in a brick-and-mortar house of worship? You can reach us here in Washington at 1-800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. If you're praying online now, you can surf over to our blog when you're done and join the conversation at npr.org/blogofthenation. Our first guest is Chris Wyatt, who created the website GodTube. He is at member station KAZU in Monterey, California. Merry Christmas.
Well, Merry Christmas, Ari. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. That video, Baby Got Book, and actually a lot of videos on your website, seem very irreverent. Is that more typical of religion online, you think, than religion in a brick-and-mortar church?
Well, actually, the videos you're watching are youth videos that are either created in a church or shown in church, and that happens to be one of the more popular ones at GodTube.com. So you get to see what's happening in all churches around the United States, not just in your congregation, but also in the youth ministries as well.
How would you say that the material on the website differs from the stuff that you see in traditional churches?
Well, certainly we're no substitute for church. You know, what we're trying to do is use technology to reach those with the message of Jesus Christ that normally wouldn't be able to have access to it. And what I mean by that is in an increasingly secular society, we live in gated communities and gated apartment complexes, and it's very hard for the church to go door to door like it did just a few years ago to be able to help spread the message.
Are people who are visiting your website typically already churchgoers, or are many of them discovering religion for the first time on websites like this?
Well, that's a good question. Certainly we don't ask. We're a non-threatening environment. I think Newsweek said it best. We're the Christian answer to YouTube, and we've launched our family-friendly answer to Facebook. But I would say we're certainly there to service the 2.1 billion Christians worldwide, and more importantly, to have the answers that perhaps the 4 billion who are seeking faith out there are looking for.
Your website has grown incredibly quickly, something like 1,000% in the first month. And since it launched last August, there are something like 40,000 videos on the site. What kind of a niche do you think this is filling that traditional churches have not been able to fill in the past?
Well, certainly we consider it Christianity on demand. It's there 24/7, you know, when you need it. And, of course, we've signed up 75 of the largest media ministries and churches and mega churches in America. And what you get at GodTube.com is not just one denominational view. We like to consider ourselves the Switzerland of Christianity. So everybody is welcome. So you can come and you can watch a Catholic service, you can watch a Protestant service, or certainly, you know, everything from, you know, Baptist all the way to Church of Christ, certainly in a non-threatening environment.
Is this sort of the new televangelism?
Boy, you know, it's interesting. You know, a lot of our partners look at it that way. Certainly, it's, you know, since there are really no barriers to entry, such as a television station or a radio station, almost anybody, you know, any small church, any pastor, or just really anybody can get on GodTube.com and certainly, you know, start preaching, asking, you know, some of the hard questions about Christianity. So it's really a whole new form of Christianity.
Since you started GodTube.com, other people have started JewTube and IslamicTube, similar websites for other faiths. How do these websites relate to each other? Have you been in touch with the owners of those sites?
No, I certainly have not. But we certainly applaud, you know, all faiths, you know, trying to do what we have at GodTube.com. Certainly, you know, we've been blessed, and we are the largest Christian website, you know, on the planet right now. And we're just kind of looking to grow that user base. So I certainly applaud YouTube. As a matter of fact, the founder actually credited us, which I do appreciate, and we wish him all the best.
Well, if any of our listeners have had religious experiences online, we want you to call in. That number is 1-800-989-8255, or you could email us at talk@npr.org. And Chris Wyatt, you said you don't see this as a substitute for church. What do you think are the limitations of religion online?
Well, certainly we're not going to send a pastor out to officiate a wedding or a funeral, or we're not going to send, you know, one of our laypersons over to help grandma, you know, out back a car out in the snow. But certainly we're there really almost as a pre-evangelical tool, if you will. You know, since we've started at GodTube.com, over 10 million people have logged on. And, you know, it's really unique because we haven't spent one dime in marketing or advertising, which would take millions of dollars normally to push this type of traffic to a website. So certainly the need is out there to hear the message. It's just the delivery mechanism that that needed a little updating.
You've created something called a virtual prayer wall, and I wonder whether you could describe what that is for our listeners.
Well, you know, prayer certainly is the best Christmas gift of all. And because everybody can't be physically in one place, we've created the virtual prayer wall. And what that is we've really taken the prayer chains and prayer vigils high tech. An individual who's in need of prayer or someone who, for example, knows someone who's in need of prayer can certainly upload a prayer request using text or video or even photographs and post it on the virtual prayer wall. There are millions of people waiting to pray for you at GodTube.com, and if you log on now, you can actually see just literally tens of thousands of the most heartwarming, you know, prayers, and you can answer them too, which is really a new phenomenon.
So the idea is a user in need says, I need a prayer for health or for help with my son, and then users respond to that specific request wherever they are in the world?
Absolutely, that's right. They can upload a video of themselves or a photo of a loved one in need. You know, we have people praying for everything from, you know, Britney Spears and her sister all the way to the troops in Iraq. Just really touching and moving, really a touching and moving testament to Christianity and those certainly who are in need of prayer.
Your website has paid advertisers, and the religion website BeliefNet.com was recently purchased by Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox News and other news organizations. Do you worry that religion online could become too commercialized?
Well, certainly in our case, you know, we're privately financed, and I certainly applaud Rupert for buying BeliefNet. They're certainly a great website as well. But in our case, you know, we are the largest broadcaster of Christian video in the world. We broadcast more video in one day than all the other Christian networks do in a year. So certainly we've got to be able to pay for that. We have to be able to pay for that very expensive bandwidth. Is it becoming too Christian? I don't think so.
Too commercial,
Too commercial. I don't think that I think the users are discerning enough. If you take a look at the prayer wall, for example, there are no commercials on the prayer wall. Of course, that certainly makes sense. If you take a look at the virtual Bible, and we do have ads there. So we do have to be very respectful in what advertisers we bring on and which ones we don't allow. I do see that becoming an issue.
All right. Well, let's take a call. This is Debbie in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Debbie. Hi, Debbie. Are you there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Well, my comment is that I'm a member of the Baha'i Faith, and we don't believe in a clergy. And so I think it's really neat that people can research religions online because you can have a spiritual experience should be between you and God, not between you and clergy or anything else. So I just think that that's an interesting movement.
Have you used the web to facilitate your spiritual experiences?
Yes, my faith has had a spiritual website or a website over 10 years now. So, you know, we can go online, we can request prayers, we can look up prayers, we can see what other members of our faith around the world are doing and what's going on in Haifa, Israel, and you know, all kinds of things. And we can do blogs and chat rooms. And so we've used the website to communicate worldwide.
I also wonder, Debbie, of course, I don't know how large the Baha'i community is in Grand Rapids, but for people who are living in isolated areas in a faith that may not have as large a population as, say, Christianity, does the web help to connect and find a community where you might not otherwise have had one?
Oh, certainly. There's probably a little bit around, 150 Baha'is in Grand Rapids, but around the world there's Baha'is in every country, so it does help you communicate and let each other know what's going on and who's, sponsoring prayer nights or any kind of educational things or fundraisers. And so, you know, we've used it for years, and it's just a way, to communicate.
Okay, Debbie, thanks a lot for your call.
Bye-bye.
And Chris Wyatt of GodTube, have you found that brick-and-mortar churches have gotten a boost from your website?
Absolutely. We get emails literally every week about people who have come to GodTube.com and it's really re-energized their faith, or they've come to know Christ, you know, through the website. And certainly that's really our goal. You're going to see a church locator, and certainly we have tools as well that allow people to communicate both in voice and video around the world. It's really amazing how the internet is transforming faith these days.
Explain to me why somebody would go to GodTube to view a sermon when they could go to church and see a sermon in person with a community of like-minded worshipers.
Well, certainly, you know, there is no community aspect on GodTube.com, except if you go to one of our virtual Bible studies or you join one of the chat rooms. But certainly what we serve is an entirely different purpose. At GodTube.com, you go in, what we see people's asking questions about, you know, about life's hard situations, you know, about divorce, about, you know, a marriage, about, you know, diseases, for example. And what ends up happening is they'll ask that in the search engine and they get multiple denominations responses or answers to that. So where you may be a Catholic, for example, or you may be a Baptist, you know, a Church of Christ pastor may speak to you. And it's our hope that, you know, having going in and seeing those, you know, multiple answers to those questions, that you'll initially, you know, respond to that and then hopefully get engaged in a local community, in a local church.
Do you have one favorite recent posting?
Oh, I sure do. Little girl in Psalm 23 is just absolutely adorable. If you haven't seen it out there, about 5 million people on the web have seen it. And just today, for example, on the homepage, there's a gentleman, a Chinese national, who's in Australia and is talking about the prayer wall and how he believes the prayer wall at GodTube.com will help re-energize prayer across the world.
Do you find that people are more comfortable asking difficult questions in cyberspace than they might be in person?
Absolutely. You know, certainly that's kind of one of the things that we've seen at GodTube.com. I you know, am a member of my local church, and certainly I serve there. And what I see is more people asking the hard questions at GodTube.com. Of course, it's not as impersonal, but at the same time, it's kind of it's in the comfort of your own home. It's in your office. You're not face-to-face with a layperson or a clergy, for that matter.
Thanks so much for joining us this Christmas, Chris.
Well, thank you very much.
Chris Wyatt is founder of GodTube.com. We'll continue our conversation about online religion after the break. We're taking your calls at 1-800-989-8255. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Ari Shapiro in Washington. We're getting the spirit this hour online. Religion is growing in cyberspace from first to second life. Are you confessing your sins in an online church, uploading a sermon you delivered at home? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we're joined now by Beth Brown, who created a synagogue and runs a large Jewish community in the virtual world of Second Life. Hi, Beth.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Now, you've been called the matriarch of virtual Judaism. Can you just, for people who have not been to Second Life, and I should mention that people who are on Second Life now can teleport over to the Jewish neighborhood and check it out for themselves, can you describe what the area is like?
Well, Second Life in general is a 3D virtual environment where you can, for free, create an avatar and explore what is literally another world online. Millions of people interact, create using the interface provided by Linden Labs, which is the owner, to create the world. Everything in the world is created by the residents. It's not a game to where there's a point or where you win.
And what specifically is the Jewish world there like?
Well, it's huge now. It started about a year ago with Second Life Synagogue, which I built, and has, over the last year, grown to over 600 members. There's the Second Life Synagogue. We now have our own Jewish newspaper in Second Life called Two Life. There's a version of the Western Wall, the Kotel. There's even a kosher speakeasy behind the synagogue.
You know, I should mention, you and I were actually chatting on Second Life earlier today. And
yep.
When I came up to you, your avatar, rather, your virtual character, was wearing a Santa hat. And you were chatting with somebody who was dressed in very traditional religious garb, a big black hat and white fringes. And it struck me that in the real world, you would not often see these two people chatting together.
Yeah, that's very true. One of the most amazing things about the community, which is called TMA with the Second Life Synagogue, is the fact that people from every level of observance, from the ultra-Orthodox, like who we met, Groovin' Reuven Greenberg, who runs the yeshiva there, to...
the yeshiva, the Jewish school.
Yeah, well, this was a more advanced one. We also have a Hebrew school, which is a little bit less intimidating. But people like me who were, you know, conservative, I would never have felt comfortable walking up to someone like Reuven in real life. And here, everybody is kind of standing together as one group of people, and it's really an amazing, beautiful thing.
Are there people who have transitioned their Second Life religious practices to real life practices?
Yes, and that's probably the most rewarding thing about it, is when we hear that people who came and because they wanted to learn about their heritage or haven't practiced in a long time and have been intimidated, start doing things in real life, because you really cannot actually practice the rituals themselves in Second Life. But hopefully these people take the things out, like lighting candles on Friday nights and going to synagogue and stuff like that.
You have candle lighting for different times all over the world in Second Life, so that wherever people are in your virtual synagogue, they can light the candles at the appropriate time.
Yeah, actually, we make the time in our virtual synagogue before the actual real-life candle lighting times in those areas. So if those people are what we call Shomer Shabbos observant, they don't have to feel conflicted getting on the computer and lighting candles. It's out of respect for the, you know.
Huh. Interesting. Well, let's take a call. This is Ruby in Sonoma, California. Hi, Ruby.
How are you this morning?
Fine, thanks. Go ahead.
I know you're ahead of us, so it's a little after 11 here in California. Are these internet church sections, are they voice activated?
Beth, do you want to handle that? Beth Brown, who works on Second Life?
I appreciate.
Yeah. Recently, a few months ago, voice came to Second Life, and you have the option to either enable it or not. You can enable it and just listen and type back, or you can enable it and speak and listen. People choose to do both. I do both. So it is voice activated, yeah.
Ruby, I understand you're blind, and so this is...
Well, I can't read. I'm not completely blind, but I can't read. And so I have equipment, and I have a printer and a scanner and computer and stuff, and I don't have training on it. State of California doesn't train you.
Well, Beth, how does Second Life open an avenue for religious practice for people who may be disabled in other ways?
Well, we have a lot of community activities and ceremonial, like in the spirit of gatherings, like lighting the candles, and we have talks on the Torah portions of the week. We have a lot of social activities, lots and lots of different activities that we do. And there are a few disabled people or homebound people that, for them, this is really the most that they can do because they can't leave their house. And it gives them a really wonderful opportunity to interact with other people that are Jewish or, you know, have a feel like they're part of a community when they can't get out.
Okay, thanks for the call, Ruby.
I thank you.
Our next guest is Allison Marshall. She's an associate professor of religion at Brandon University in Manitoba, Canada. And some people have tried to recreate the spiritual experience online with mixed results. Professor Marshall tried this for a recent project, and she joins us from her home in Saskatoon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Brandon, Manitoba.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right.
You explored Eastern religious traditions and surveyed web users to see whether they had spiritual experiences. What did you find?
What I found for the most part was that next to no one was able to recreate a religious experience online. A few people. But for the most part, people really found that the technology wasn't where it should be. And so they couldn't have the kinds of experiences in a virtual temple, the kinds of religious experiences that they could in a real temple.
Well, does that suggest that as technology improves, the chances of having a spiritual experience online may increase?
I have to say, when I started the project, I was really very hopeful that it was possible, but... It was 4 years that I spent on the project, and over that time I realized that religion is about being a human being, and being a human being is about using you know, being religious with the mind and the body. And writing all of those, or as a programmer or marketer who creates a religious environment on the internet, which is what we see most often, you have to write a lot into that programming to recreate both, you know, experiences that you could have with the mind, but also ones that could be experienced viscerally with the body.
Well, let me ask Beth Brown of Second Life whether this fits with her experience. Is it difficult for people to have a religious experience online?
Well, it depends on how you define a religious experience. We don't have any actual services of any kind, because I do agree you can't recreate that. And it's also against the religion as well to try and do something like that. But the chances that people get to meet other people that are like them from all over the world, and at the same time have had lifelong different experiences, when a lot of us, you know, I'm one of the only Jewish people all my friends know. So it's nice to be able to go on there and run into a lot of people who understand and that you can talk to and learn from different things. And that in itself can lead to spiritual experiences.
Let's take another call. This is Gus from Berkeley, California. Hi, Gus.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much. Actually, my Gus is a nickname. My actual name is Guru Prem Singh Khalsa. Singh Sahib Guru Prem Singh Khalsa. I'm a minister, an ordained minister in the tradition of Sikh Dharma. We have the fifth largest religion on the planet. But in any case, I use high technology to establish and maintain a one-to-one relationship with members of my congregation. What I do is basically, if somebody's in trouble, they can send me an email message, and I will almost instantly pick it up, return their call, and we might have a little prayer session right then and there where they describe their situation. You know, maybe it's a homeless mother and her children are being threatened by their ex, you know, her ex, their father, or whatever. And so we'll pray for peace and for the abandonment of fear and looking toward the light and so on. And then we'll go into a silent meditation where we will simply accept the blessings of the divine and look forward to the grace of God. That's pretty much how I do it.
And so you find that the web augments the religious practice that you had in place
absolutely.
Already.
Well, I guess my point is that the high technology, essentially, in my view, is merely a means to an end. The end is the connection of one spiritual being with another. And in my personal experience, the voice, as has been discussed earlier on air, the voice is a very, very intimate means for people to communicate. And when you connect with someone voice to voice over a reasonably high quality line, essentially what you're doing is you're merging in the spirit, at least in a virtual sense. But it's very profoundly real experience, and you can resonate on a heart-to-heart basis.
Well, thanks for the call, Gus. It's good to hear
your
voice. Let's go to another call. This is Tom in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hi, Tom.
Hi. There's a large congregation in Dallas, Texas, the Cathedral of Hope. It's recently affiliated with the United Church of Christ. But they have a large online ministry, national ministry to gay and lesbian people. It's the largest congregation with its primary ministry to gay and lesbians. And the congregation welcomes people to worship with them online in small towns where gay and lesbian people may have been marginalized by their mainline church. And I think it's a real opportunity. The web has provided a real opportunity there to reach out to people who have otherwise been marginalized.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call, Tom. Well, Beth Brown, it sounds from the people we've talked to as though, as Chris Wyatt of GodTube said earlier in the hour, the web can certainly facilitate mainstream religions coming together and strengthening their practice, but also marginalized groups, smaller religions, really use this quite a bit as a real community builder.
Oh, yes.
Has the community, the religious community in Second Life that you've created, taken on a life of its own, or do you find that it augments the separate real-life communities that people have around the country?
Well, it actually does both, kind of at the same time. It wasn't something I really planned to do. It just kind of grew into that. So it did take a life of its own. And at the same time, a lot of people take the things that they start learning, like they'll come to one of our Torah talk discussions, and then they'll go to their synagogue and listen to the reading, and they'll think about what they learned. So in one sense, we all know each other in there, and in another sense, we bring it out here.
Well, this hour we're talking about how you practice religion online, and we want to know how you practice your religion on the web. Give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. You can email us, talk@npr.org, or you can post on our blog. That's npr.org/blogofthenation. And Professor Marshall, you did this study of whether people had religious experiences online. Did you find any common thread among the people who did report having a religious experience on the web?
I guess I would say they were people who spent large amounts of time on the Internet, and they were people who were already part of communities like MySpace.com or Facebook, or they were actively involved in blogging. And so they were very familiar with an online environment. They had computers that had were up to date and had good software and hardware that could manage all of this data.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Professor Marshall, does that suggest that there is then a religious learning curve online where people will have an easier time having spiritual experiences as they become more comfortable in this world?
I thought about that a lot, and I think it's a lot like religion and migration. The last 125 years or so, people have been coming, different diasporic communities have been coming to North America, and we're only now starting to understand the ways in which they practice religion in this new environment. And I think the same thing is happening with the Internet. Now people are starting to turn to it, and the pioneers are the people more familiar with the technology. But I think the way in which they're approaching it at this point, at least from my experience doing this website, is something like the way people look to Buddhism in the 50s, 60s, and 70s as this kind of religious encounter that was different than the institutionalized religion they grew up with.
You know, Professor Marshall, you mentioned the idea of diaspora and people leaving their homeland. And Beth Brown, I wonder whether you have found that creating a Jewish world in Second Life changes the idea of diaspora, because you can be anywhere in the world and still be in the same virtual location as other people.
It's changed the fact that we don't have any problems finding and communicating with each other as many as we would, or hearing stories from people in other parts of the world, other parts of the country.
All right, well, let's take another caller. This is Kathleen in Oakland. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I actually have a different kind of entry, but I'm going to connect it to the Internet. I initially found my spiritual path through the radio 20-plus years ago by hearing an interview of a person who expressed an opinion that touched me. I can't explain it any more than that. And that led me to investigate further and led to in-person contact through a walking experience called Walking with Contemplation and through a meditation class. So my comment is that I think that it's very valid to find a group of people with whom you may share spiritual values, perhaps, as in my case, a group that was very, very small, through the radio or through the Internet.
And do you now use the web to further your spiritual practice?
Yes, we all connect, actually, through two different sites for the organization itself, Cal Foundation, and we also have a magazine. So both the foundation and the magazine help others to connect with us. And many people who are worldwide members actually connect through not yet the Internet, but connect through conference calls and, Internet connections by posting something to Yahoo groups.
All right, Kathleen, thanks a lot for your call.
Yeah.
Professor Marshall, it sounds like people are using the Internet in much the same way they might have used other communications technologies to further their spiritual experience. Is that consistent with what you've found?
I think so. I think people use whatever kind of technology is available, and certainly if they live farther away from a religious group or a religious community, then they're going to look for other ways to get connected. But I certainly think there are still limitations to what that can offer.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for being with us. Allison Marshall is a professor of religion at Brandon University in Manitoba, Canada. She joined us from her home in Saskatoon. And Beth Brown runs a Jewish community in the virtual world of Second Life. She joined us from the studios of KLIF in Dallas, Texas. Thank you both for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Coming up, is that something burning? Christmas is a day of love, gifts, and the occasional disaster. Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson will talk you through it. I'm Ari Shapiro. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.